In this week's Classical Music According to Yehuda, Alan Shartok and Yehuda Hanani continue their discussion of the role of interpretation on classic pieces.
Yehuda Hanani, what do you got on your mind today?
Well, I'm still obsessed with our ongoing
debate.
Much
like the Lincoln-Douglas debates. You have a very passionate, wonderful man, you, who knows an awful lot. Then you have somebody who, you know, has played in several small-time orchestras in my life, but who really knows much less than you do.
Oh, come on, Alan. All of a sudden, you're so humble.
Well, I am a humble guy. And we've been having this discussion about context and about whether or not the people should be entertained. And you have something else to bring to us today, don't you?
I'll give you
one last chance to catch up here.
Okay. As an interpreter of great works of art, I'm obsessed.
You are that.
And I'm involved and aware of all sorts of complexities, changes of instruments from period to period.
Is it always you?
Changes of styles.
Look, I've heard you play 1,000 pieces over the
yeah.
years. And there comes that point when you have to say, how am I going to play this? Am I going to be faithful to the composer? Am I going to take a liberty here with something the composer might not have intended? I might want to bring it into the 20th or 21st century. How do you decide that?
All those things come into question when you study a new piece. When the composer is still alive, you discuss it with him or her.
The director seldom talks to the playwright, they tell me, when they're putting sometimes does, sometimes doesn't, because they don't want the playwright to be a pain in the neck.
Right. That could be the case, too. Sometimes the composer is very helpful. Sometimes he's a pain in the neck.
Or lower.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Sometimes you can improve on what they wrote. And sometimes their writing, especially in the cases of the classics, is so superb that you can only try to come close to the perfection that they created.
Did you ever commission a piece in which the composer, after all, you're paying him, turned around to you and said, you know, maestro, that was much better than the way I wrote it?
I don't think their ego would allow them to admit that.
My point exactly.
But, you know, Tchaikovsky was a lousy conductor. And he always conducted the first performances of his symphonies. And it was a huge flop. Terrible, terrible flop. People just destroyed him after every performance. And then a good conductor would pick up the same symphony. And it was a huge success.
Wait a second. I don't know. I've never understood that. Maybe you can help me with this. You know, a guy gets up there with a stick, starts waving it around. What makes a difference between a good conductor and a lousy conductor?
Well, the guy who waves a stick is a lousy conductor.
I don't get it.
And the man who understands what the message is and the music is and knows how to inspire people to join him with the interpretation is a great master. That's exactly the difference. It's not about waving the stick, and it's not about an ego trip. It's not about impressing the audience with how you jump on the podium either.
I don't understand that at all, Yoda. I mean, it seems to me that this business of is highly overrated. Now, I can understand when the guy, you go to Tanglewood on a Saturday afternoon, and you go to the open rehearsal, and you can see the nuances and how people, you know, how conductors say, no, I think too much brass, not enough strings, you know, we can do that, better meld, that kind of thing. I can truly understand that. But when they finally get up there, I mean, after all the hard work is done before, then really, how could Tchaikovsky have been a bad conductor?
Maybe he was too timid. Maybe he was not energetic enough. Maybe he didn't convey with his body language the message of the music. There's so many possibilities.
Has anybody ever written about, I'm sure they have, about the conductor as a dancer?
There is choreography. People respond to your body language, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
I played with the Chicago Symphony with an elderly Hungarian conductor. We did the Beethoven Triple, and I remember they were just doing, you know, business as usual, playing.
And you were the guest?
I was the guest soloist. And he stopped and he said, in a very soft voice, he said, "Gentlemen, you can play so much better." That's all he did. And then we started again.
Did they play better?
Boom, yes.
What did they do differently?
I mean, they were involved, they were engaged. He was challenging them to actually be the musicians that they were. It was very beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah. But to conclude our complexity of interpretations, last time we went back to medieval art and the idea of taking religious material out of context and putting it in museums, or taking liturgical music and putting it in concert halls. Just one step back, and then we conclude this issue. How about ancient Greek art? You know, all those magnificent figures, you know, the from Mount Olympus, you know, Hermes and Athena and Aphrodite and Zeus. They were all deities. They were gods for the original observers, people who looked at them. They represented, they were divinity. Now, today we go to the museum, we apply only an aesthetic criterion when we look at them,
we
right?
We put them down sometimes.
You don't, there's no religious sentiment involved when you look at the Greek
Pete Seeger saying,
piece.
I saw Aphrodite in her see-through nightie.
You did.
That's what Pete Seeger
said. Did he evoke some religious sentiment in
no.
you? I see, that's the point.
The name of the song was Give Me That Old-Time Religion.
So again, the original experience, the original intention is not experienced. The artist who did it, the sculptor or painter, intended something very different. And here we are going, and we have changed entirely the way we interpret this, let alone the fact, or leave apart the fact, that all these statues were heavily painted with strong colors, big pigment, we have our notion of milk white Greek antiquity. You know, this is the creation of the Renaissance. It's not at all Greek. So there you go with the complexity
okay,
no, of
all right, fine, Yehuda. But last word is that it's all Greek to me.
That was Alan Shartok speaking to cellist Yehuda Hanani in our segment Classical Music According to Yehuda. For information about Yehuda's Close Encounters with Music series in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, visit cewm.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.